Hello and welcome back to Let the Stone Speak. I'm Brent Nachtigall, your host. I'm here atop Tel Lachish in the Judean lowlands, and today we're going to interview Professor Yosef Garfinkel of Hebrew University, who's been excavating the site for about a decade this year with a couple of other teams, or a team from South Korea and also a big team from Brazil as well. So you can look forward to that coming up in a little bit, but I just wanted to mention, if you like these videos, don't forget to like and subscribe to our channel so that you don't miss any of our great content. But here's the interview with Professor Garfinkel. Professor Yosef Garfinkel, thanks very much for being with us today.
It's my pleasure.
So we're here at Tel Lachish, one of the most important sites in Judah throughout many different periods, and this is...
I like to exaggerate. I'm saying that this is one of the most important sites in the ancient Near East.
Southern Levant and then on all the way to
the
east.
Sure, because we have connection to Mesopotamia with the Sennacherib and the relief. And then we have connection to Egypt with the Amarna tablet, and we have here important pottery from Cyprus and from Greek. So really, the entire Near East is encapsulated in the site of Lachish.
And why is that? Why do you think this site was originally inhabited?
Originally, it started already in Neolithic, Chalcolithic. There are some remains that were found here at the site. But basically, it's halfway between Hebron and Ashkelon.
Ashkelon is
on the hill country to the east, and Ashkelon on the shore to the west. And you can think about merchant leaving the port city of Ashkelon, going one day walk, stop here, buying, selling, and after a few days have another day walk and they will reach Hebron. So Lachish is halfway between these two centers, and I think it's give it one of its strength. Look, this is one of the strong point in its location.
So Hebron, if I'm not mistaken, we have some habitation going back to Middle Bronze Age, or even Middle Bronze Age, I think, there. Is that the time period where you see big fortifications start here?
Yes, Lachish has a strong fortification in the Middle Bronze, like Hebron and other sites in all over the Levant, yeah.
As far as the excavation season this year, you've been digging here for many years. What are the main goals of this year's dig?
This is really now the ninth season that I'm working in Tel Lachish. We came to Lachish for one main question, and we're still bothering with the same one main question. And this is Rehoboam fortifications. And this is because before I worked in Chibet Kayafa, we found a fortified city from the time of King David. We found a shrine model which fit the biblical description of Solomon Palace and Solomon Temple. And as you know, the 10th century is under heavy debate.
Right, as to its historicity.
The historicity of the biblical tradition about the 10th century BC was under heavy debate.
And the kings in the 10th century, if we could just lay that out for us.
Yeah, the kings, it started first Saul, or maybe already lived only in the 11th century BC, but when you think about kings ruling from Jerusalem, you have David, Solomon, and then Rehoboam. In this way, you can close the entire 10th century BC, compare archaeology in the biblical text, and verified this debate. We came here to verify when Lachish was fortified. If it would be 1000 BC, at the time of David. If it will be 960 BC, it will be the time of Solomon. And if it's about 930 BC, at the time of Rehoboam. So we excavated in the northern part of the site, and we found beautiful city wall and storage houses running to it and private houses. We have now 28 hydrocarbon dating.
So I believe actually I was here with you at the site when we were
excavated over there.
That was a few years ago, but now you're in a different part of the tell.
No, the point is like this. We found a city wall over there. And radiocarbon dating starting indeed around 930 BC and end at around 860.
Okay.
And then radiocarbon dating of the next phase, which is level 4, starting around 860 till 800 BC. So radiocarbon dating shows us very well that level 5 was established and built and the city wall in the later part of the 10th century BC. But this city wall was found only in one location. Okay. It was not found by other expeditions who worked here before. It was not found in the west, it was not found in the south. So my idea was that maybe it was a smaller city. And only later the old mound was fortified. And we can see this pattern in other Iron Age cities, like Hatzor and like Tel Natzbe and Tel Faranos. And other examples. Iron Age started as small and then over time became bigger. So this was my idea. Anyhow, I have a Korean student, now he's a professor in Seoul, Hugo Kang. He didn't like my idea.
It's good to have some people on your team that push back a little bit.
Everybody has his, I'm not forcing anybody to have my idea or other ideas. This free intellectual atmosphere here.
Okay.
So Hugo didn't like my idea. So he came here to the south part. If we are in the north, he wants to take the south.
Okay.
And he makes surveys on the slope. And in one location, he found a very massive wall penetrating to the topsoil. So he start excavating there, and indeed it's 3 meters wide, very impressive, but the dating is middle bones.
Okay.
So it was...
So that's almost 1,000 years earlier.
More or less, yes. Yeah. But he didn't give up, then he continued, and over here, he saw again on the slope, a very massive wall, he start excavating, and bingo, this is level 5 city wall.
Found it.
So I was wrong. The student was correct. And you know what makes the student most happy?
To prove the professor was wrong.
So this is the situation. And we are working now here for the third year and trying to enlarge the area and to see more of the city wall.
So just behind us here, is that the square that was opened?
Later you can take photo from there. It's about 4 meters wide, very impressive city wall. We have offset in it. Because we are turning here, so it's making an offset to where the northern part of the site. Altogether, we are exposing now about 30 meters of this city wall. Very impressive and monumental remain from the later part of the 10th century BC.
And
here we should mention that there is a biblical tradition that King Rehoboam fortified 15 cities in Judah.
You read that first. And you're like, well, let's test it to see if,
exactly.
See if it's there.
We have these historical memories in the biblical text. And the question is how much, if it's historical or not historical. A scholar like Nadav Neiman wrote that this is a list from the time of Hezekiah. Another scholar, Volkmer Fritz, wrote an article that this list is from the time of Josiah.
Okay.
And another, Israel Finkelstein, wrote that this is from the time of John Hyrcanus, make it Hashmonean list.
Right.
And it's ridiculous. How could you, if you have 22 kings in Judah, so you can write 22 articles each time relating it to another king? Right. I think personally that either the list or any list in the biblical text, either it's historical or we can't tell. Mm-hmm. But you cannot just move it up and down by hundreds of years. It's ridiculous.
Right. Right.
It's based on nothing.
Right.
This is not science.
Right.
So there was a list. And we were interested in historical memories of the 10th century BC, so we came to Lachish to see, is there or not a city wall from the time of Rehoboam. And indeed, we found one, as I said, in the northern part of the site, and now we have another part here in the south. So altogether, we know that Lachish, already in the time of Rehoboam, occupied the entire
tell,
which is about seven and a half hectares.
7.5 hectares?
Yeah, large city. Usually cities in Judah like Tel Bet-Mirsim, Bet-Shemesh and other are not more than 3 or 4 hectares. And Lachish already from the beginning was almost double in size.
So why was, in your opinion, the beginning of Tel Lachish during the period of Israelite Judean control during Rehoboam's time and not earlier, as you might expect, as people might expect?
Well, I think that you have to look at the kingdom of Judah like Israel today. We have Jerusalem, which is a political and religious center, but you have Tel Aviv as the economic center. And it was the same in antiquity. Jerusalem, you have the temple and you have the palace, the political and religious elite. But the main economic strength was here in the Shvela, in the lowland.
Okay.
If you look at the ecology of the Kingdom of Judah, you have 4 major ecological zones. You have the Judean desert, you have the hill country, you have the lowland, the Shvela, and you have the Negev. The Negev and the Judean desert are not good for large-scale agriculture. So you basically have nomads, Bedouin, and you have pastoral economy. The hill country is also very steep, and you don't have much land for agriculture. So this area here, the lowland, from Bet Shemesh to Tel Av, all together, this was the main production center of the kingdom.
Right.
Most of the agricultural activities and the population concentrated in this region. And here in Lachish, there was a big palace of the kings of Judah, and it was a military center, economic center, and probably also an intellectual center, because we have the Lachish letters, and we have other inscriptions which were found here.
So as far as 10th century goes, you've started to find the city wall. I noticed that you actually have three areas of investigation this season. Mm-hmm. One here, one further along the city wall, where it could be, and then one right in the middle of the center, or very close to the center of the tell. What's the purpose of that area?
The area near in the center of the tell is excavated by Dr. Itamar Weisbin. Mm-hmm. He was looking for the last Canaanite city of Lachish. We also have a tradition that Joshua and the people of Israel destroyed the last Canaanite city. However, he's going directly to Middle Bronze.
Okay.
So he's a bit... It. What's happened was they built the palace, they shaved the top of the site in order to make it probably flat and to have a large courtyard for the palace. The palace of the King of Judah.
Okay.
So during the Iron Age, they leveled the area on the top of the site, removing probably a large part of what was early. And in this case, you fell almost directly on Middle Bronze period. Yeah.
So he's a little bit disappointed about that, but you find what you find.
Yes, he's a bit disappointed, but there was still some pit going from a later period down, even a Persian pit going down to this area. And in one of the late bronze pit, we found yesterday a broken inscription, probably written in proto-Canaanite script.
Wow.
But just the beginning, we need to study, to take good photograph and study it and so on.
So one of the important discoveries from this site over time has been the amount of inscriptions, as you say.
No other site in the entire Levant produced so many Canaanite inscriptions for Middle Bronze and Late Bronze as Lachish.
And the Late Bronze level here, what's the dating of the ending of that?
The ending of level 6, according to radiocarbon dating, is around 1150 BC.
Okay.
So in the middle of the 12th century.
And then... So we're in Lachish, and just connecting this, we actually had to drive down the 6 because I missed the turn off the Bet Shemesh, which was okay. It was free for us going south, not like those people. But we turned at Kiryat Gat, we came this direction, and then we passed Kibbutz Arai on the right, which you previously excavated. So you said the destruction of this is like... 11th century or end of 12th century, something like
middle
that.
Middle of the 12th century,
but
yes.
Then that site over there, I think, is occupied during that's around that same time period. How do these two sites interact with one another?
So we have here the big city of Lachish and a big mound, and about 2-3 miles to the west, we have a smaller site, only around 1.5 hectares.
Okay, so smaller.
And when Lachish was a big city, the other site was not inhabited.
Okay.
But when Lachish was destroyed and deserted, Kibbutz Arai became a small town of like 1.5 or 1.7 hectares. And it was exactly in the second half of the 12th century, the 11th century, and part of the 10th century BC. And then it was left, and Lachish was here again as a big city in level 5. So one site is big, one is small, and then it's changed.
And then as far as the historical events surrounding that, that's kind of the middle of towards the end of the Judges period.
In the time of the Judges, and indeed we found this inscription with the name Jerubal in Kibbutz Arai, which is also the name of biblical Gideon. So you can see that the same name in the Bible and archaeology fit nicely chronologically.
But
I have something else to say about...
Sure, go ahead. Please.
Still about the debate with the minimalist, 8 miles from here, more or less, we have the site of biblical Gat. Mm-hmm. Gat at the 10th and 9th century BC was a major political center with about 40 to 50 hectares in size.
Huge.
Huge. And then around 830 BC, it has been destroyed by Hazael.
Mm-hmm.
We know
king.
This, the Aramaic king from Damascus. Mm-hmm. We know this from the biblical text, one verse in the biblical text. Now, many minimalists like to take this tradition and said, as far as Gat was its important center, Judah was not able to go to the lowland. Mm. And only after the destruction of Gat, Judah came here and built Lachish.
Mm.
But now we know that Lachish was fortified already a century before the destruction of Gat.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a kind of chicken and egg question. Was Judah able to come to the lowland because Gat has been destroyed? Because Judah came to the lowland, they took over land and population and resources. Gat was losing its economic strength, and then it was easy to destroy it.
Hmm.
And now we can see that Gat has been destroyed because Judah came to the land and not opposite.
So Judah here, 100 years before, started to exercise control over the lowlands,
mm-hmm.
and then Gat fell, Philistine cities diminished in power, and then the Arameans took advantage of that. Is that?
That's what I think, yes.
And so that's the 10th century, but two other periods of after that are mentioned in the biblical text for this town. I wonder if you can talk about, first, you wrote an article that involved the Assyrian besiegement, and that's probably the most recognizable history for Lachish. What did you discover any of that, or were you working off past research for some of your conclusions about the siege ramp and such?
The 701 BC, Sennacherib conquering of Lachish, is the most documented event in the history of the ancient Near East. Mm-hmm. We have four different sources. We have the Assyrian document, we have the Assyrian relief, we have the biblical tradition, and this is in the
book. In three different books.
In three different books, or even four different books. Yeah. And then we also have archaeology. Mm-hmm. Where else in the ancient Near East do you have so many resources and information about one event?
Right.
Nowhere.
Right.
And it's also methodology, because you have the Assyrian are the winning. And usually we say that the winning are writing the history.
Right.
But in this case, you have also the Judean who lost. So you have the winner and the loser. You have the depiction mm-hmm. of Lachish, Sennacherib relief, and then we have the site, archaeology. We have here the oldest siege ramp ever found in archaeology. It was excavated before by David Ossishkin, and on top of the siege ramp he found a battleground mm-hmm. with hundreds of arrowheads and sling stone, and also heavy stone dumped down from the Judean, from the top of the wall. So really amazing discovery. Few years ago, we make a research about how this siege ramp has been constructed. Mm-hmm. Because when you look at it, you can see only stones, no sediment. You cannot see any walls inside.
Okay.
So it was made by pouring stones. This is also how the Bible describes it, that you shofir, you pour, like you pour water, you pour solela, you pour the siege ramp, which means it's dumped stones. The purpose of the siege ramp is to create a road leading from the surface up 20 meters high to the base of the city wall, and then you can start crushing the city wall with the siege engine. Mm-hmm. But how do you bring the siege engine, which was 1 ton or maybe 2 tons, all the way to the city wall? You must build a road for it.
Right.
The slope of the tail is like this. You cannot push it
right.
in a very steep degree. So we can calculate that at least 80 to 100 meters ramp was needed in order to create this road leading into the city wall. And when you look at it, it's all made from stones. We calculated the weight of the stone. We took 200 and we have measured men. It's about 6.5 kilo, not heavy. Mm-hmm. Now, what was the best efficient way to create this siege ramp? Some people said they collected stone in the field.
That'd be a long time of finding stones.
We calculated that you need 3 million stones.
Okay.
And after one day, you start need to go kilometers to bring stone. It's not logical. Then some people said that Porter took the stone and dumped them. But then Porter had to go back and forth. And what will happen with the basket? Mm-hmm. They will deteriorate after a day or two. So you need a factory for basket.
Right.
It's not logical. The most efficient way is to have a quarry at the far edge of the siege ramp. Mm-hmm. Hundreds of people were sitting crushing stone day and night. And four rows of people moved the stone from hand to hand. The people were standing, only the stone moved. Mm-hmm. And tuck, 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 tuck. Every second another stone fell in. If they're working day and night, 160,000 stone can be dumped in one day. And in order to have 3 million, you need about 20 days.
Well, it's nothing.
And this is exactly what...
the efficiency of the Assyrian Empire.
And this is exactly what Isaiah mentioned. He said the Assyrian... They're not sleeping, not dozing. Mm-hmm. They're working day and night.
Right.
But they cannot work day and night when they're marching all the way from Mesopotamia here. They need to sleep overnight.
Right.
So where are they working 24 hours a day in shifts? On the siege ramp. Mm-hmm. That's what he's describing.
And we'll put a link to that article. Anybody can read that, right? It's available online so people can
And if it's not online, I can give you, put it on the Academy Edu.
Okay, we'll look at that. So that city obviously is... destroyed.
So this city has been destroyed at 701. The Syrian burned the city, left the siege ramp, and disappeared. And then came the people of level 2, the last city in the history of the kingdom of Judah in Lachish. And the famous Lachish letters were found in the gate of level 2.
And we walk through the gate. It's extremely wide, six chambers.
Yeah, impressive.
Very impressive. So these letters, they're ostraca that were found at the site. Just briefly, what
they were they? Found in 1935.
Okay.
And then mentioned there are a list of people and local administration, but you have also amazing information like the chief of the army went to Egypt. Mm-hmm. And you know that they have coalition with Egypt against the Babylonian.
Right.
So it's reflected in the letter. Mm-hmm. Then we have another ostraca mentioned a prophet. Mm-hmm. And they blame the prophet of saying bad things, that not encouraging the people.
Which
and it's like Isaiah, like this is exactly like Jeremiah.
Right.
But it's not Jeremiah, it's a local prophet here in Lachish. His name is not mentioned.
Well, then it could be Jeremiah. You're saying it's not. It could be.
Maybe he came. Maybe he came to Lachish.
Maybe he did. And then there's one other letter that's very interesting.
The fire signals.
Yeah, so...
Okay, and then letter number four, for probably the most famous letter, mm-hmm. mentions that people are watching the fire signals of Lachish because they cannot see Azekah. Mm-hmm. And Jeremiah mentions that the Babylonian conquered all the fortified cities of Judah beside Azekah and Lachish. And in the letter, Azekah is already destroyed probably. So a very dramatic letter from the last few days of the kingdom of Judah.
So that's, you said somewhere around here you might be finding level one.
We came to this area to excavate the city wall of level five, and we started here.
Which is level five is the Rehoboam, 10th century.
Level five is, the as we know now, is the later part of the 10th century, mm-hmm. early part of the 9th century BC. Anyhow, we came here, we enlarged the area, we have magnificent architecture. But it's level one. It's a Persian and Hellenistic city. We found here coins, arrowheads, pottery, everything that you can find in a nice archaeological level. Mm-hmm. And under it, we see the city wall continue under the level one. So this is clear that the city wall is not level one, as some minimalists might claim. Now it's clear that we have the level one building on top of the city wall.
And so that's it for the site. Once the Persian Hellenistic period is occupying the site, then from that time all the way through to the 20th century, we don't have any build-up here.
We found here and there some Byzantine remains.
Okay.
But basically, in the Hellenistic period, Marisha mm-hmm. became an important center. So Lachish and also Kirbet Kayafa were deserted, and the political power in the region moved to the site of Marisha.
So just one last question. This is about your team that you have here, where Israel is still at war, and yet you're able to be one of the few excavations that are able to continue this summer. How did you make it happen?
We have here three groups. Mm-hmm. One, the largest, came from Brazil.
Wow.
About 28 people, and they came for a week only.
Okay.
But it's better than nothing.
Absolutely.
Another group are Korean people that are here for 2 weeks. And we also have Israelis that are excavating here for 2 weeks. So the first week we were smaller, only 20 people around, more or less. And now the second week we have about 50 people.
And you've got one more day of excavation after this?
Usually we were excavating 6 weeks with about 100 people.
Okay.
In Lachish and Kirbet Kayafa. And then because of the wars and all this political situation, universities are not sending students anymore. So we have more individual volunteers. But we are not stopping. No, nothing will stop us from going on.
Well, great.
We keep going. We are keep going. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Professor Garfinkel.
So you are welcome.
Thank you very much to Professor Garfinkel and his team for having us out here today, one day before they close up the excavations. Don't forget to like and subscribe to the video if you enjoyed this content, to make sure you don't miss any of our great interviews with these archaeologists here in Israel. Professor Hugo Kang, thank you very much for talking to us today. So, I've just spoken to Professor Garfinkel, and he spoke about how a few years ago he wanted to test a theory about the extent of the 10th century BC fortifications. How did that come about?
In 2015, in the fourth expedition to Lachish, we have discovered the city wall level 5 on the northern slope in area C. Mm-hmm. After that, I walk around, surveyed the mound,
okay.
all the slopes, east, west, and the north, south, and I walk around to check if we have the city wall remains exposed on the surface.
Okay.
I walk on the southern slope. And I have farm, this this one right behind us. Yeah. So that's why we open our area and to find if it is the schedule of level 5.
Okay.
In 3 days, in the first season, it turned out I'm wrong. I was wrong. You know, it's dated to Bronze Age.
Okay.
Okay. And then we excavate, you know, according to the stratigraphy. Uh-huh. And then we came to know the what is the where is the level 5?
Okay.
Up there.
Ah, okay.
Okay. On the southern floor, the height of level 5 is there, not okay. here.
Right.
So I walk all the way this high to this to the direction to the east.
Okay.
And I have found the wall exposed on the surface, the same story. But at the same level with level 5.
Okay.
So I opened the area.
This
area.
Is the next year or the same year?
The next year, 2023. I started here 2022.
Okay.
We, you know, came back in Korea in empty hands. But in next year, I didn't give up. And I walk to the 50 meters and then I found the remains of the, it might be the city wall of level 5, and opened two squares, and we discovered the city wall of level 5.
But why did you want to test this theory? Because Garfinkel previously believed that the tell might be smaller, but that you just wanted to, what motivated you to?
Two reasons. Mm-hmm. First of all, everybody asked you, everybody says the Lachish is the second most important city in Judah. Mm-hmm. But nobody asked, you know, who made it? I want to know who made it. You know, in 9th century, 8th century, or 10th century.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to say, you know, according to the biblical description, King Rehoboam, he built the 15, you know, fortified cities, including the Lachish. Mm-hmm. So it might be the indication of the King Rehoboam's activity. You know, he built, he made the Lachish the second most important city in Judah after kingdom divided.
Okay.
Second thing is the tradition of the construction in the kingdom of Israelites.
Mm-hmm.
From the United States, the United Kingdom, from the time of King David and Solomon, I think we do have the fortified cities as construction tradition.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So I didn't find any remains of fortified city, but you know, if Rehoboam, you know, learned the construction activities from the grandfathers and the fathers, and he knows the people knows they have the knowledge of the technology, okay, for construction.
Mm-hmm.
So almost half, you know, the 50, you know, the percent, I am was sure that he has. He could build the fortified city, the Lachish. So that's the, you know, one of the names.
Did you want to come back here and see if you might be able to find more of the level 5 up there, or was this more of a this season to find more of this city? This season.
After we discovered the city wall level 5, okay, it's confirmed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, next question is, Lachish in Canaanite period.
Mm-hmm.
According to the Bible, in the 10 times, Lachish was mentioned in the book of Joshua.
Joshua, right.
But we know the Lachish was the one of the main city states in the Puna.
Mm-hmm.
But we do not have archaeological evidence from the beginning of the LB, or late Bronze Age, until the end. We have several, you know, Acropolis temple and Forge temple. We have some, you know, domestic buildings, but we do not have a massive, remains for the city states of Lachish, yes, in the Canaan period.
Okay.
I want to reveal.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Yeah, in this area.
That's great.
Well, you've got 2 more days, or 1 more day after this.
Yeah.
So you're definitely having to come back next year to continue this process. But thank you very much for all the work that you've done, and thank you for your boldness
to put a theory there and to test it, to walk along the whole site and see a couple areas where you might be able to excavate. Very pleased that you did. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.